What's up, everyone? On this episode, I spoke with Coach Mario Catano of Adams State University. Coach Mario and I got connected through one of my favorite Zoom coaches groups, Beer and Basketball. On this episode, he walks us through his journey of being the unofficial graduate assistant while still getting his undergraduate degree at Northern New Mexico College. He then shares his family's move to Las Vegas, where he spent some time away from college hoops. He found himself back at Northern New Mexico College as the interim head coach for the last 8 games of the season. And after bringing in a strong recruiting class of 17 and preparing for year 1 as the official head coach, he was offered the top assistant and recruiting coordinator position at the NCAA Division II school, Adams State University. During the episode, Coach Mario goes into depth for all of his stops in his career, what he's learned during 2020, advice for coaches, and so much more. Let's roll it back and hear how it went. All right, Coach. So how did you know that coaching was your passion and that it was what you wanted to do? I know that you played in college, but what was it for you that you knew this was something that you wanted to make a career out of?
I think it's just the love of the game I have. And obviously, how you say it, I played in college, but it kind of goes beyond that as a kid growing up, and that's all you knew. And for me, it was every day waking up, going to the Boys and Girls Club, playing basketball, or on the school days, going to school, can't wait to get out of school, walk to the Boys and Girls Club, play basketball. So I think it's just the love of basketball. And then, you know, as a kid growing up, a lot of us, it's your dreams. Oh, I want to be in the NBA. I want to be Kobe. And every day you try and do that. But then, you know, reality takes place and, you know, you're not going to be that good. And but I still love basketball. So I think what really got me into the I want to be coaching is my senior year in high school. And I think my high school coach played a really good role in that. And I kind of just watched him a little bit. And I figured, well, my playing days are going to soon be over, but I was fortunate enough to keep playing. And I think that I was able to play for so long, not so long, 4 more years after high school, wasn't because I was very good, but just because I love basketball. So I think just the love for the game got me into, I got to still figure out how to be involved in this once I'm done. And then here you go, you know, from that's how I got into coaching.
Yeah, that definitely, I can relate 100% to that story. So you were a Boys and Girls Club kid?
Oh yeah. So growing up, I think it was like $2 to get in every day. So, you know, when you're 9, 10, I'm looking for $2 every single day, driving my grandma nuts, probably $2 adds up, and I'm looking for quarters and walking to the Boys and Girls Club, sneaking in on the days we don't get the $2. but yeah, that's where it all started for me. Obviously, you know, you play at your house, but that's when going there every day and playing with other kids your age and just trying to get thrown to the fire. But yeah, if it wasn't for the Boys and Girls Club, I don't know. I mean, I think I would still be involved in basketball, but that's what just set it off for me.
Yeah, no, I hear you. Same. I was the exact same way. Couldn't wait to get to the Boys and Girls Club so I could play ball. Love it. Yeah. All right. So you were a graduate assistant at Northern New Mexico College, which is where you played, correct?
Yeah, that's where I finished playing. And it wasn't your traditional grad assistant job. So after I played everywhere, you know, I started off at Orange Coast College where you're at. Then I transferred to Otero. Then I went over to Eastern New Mexico and then I didn't like it. And then I ended up at Northern New Mexico College, which is an NAIA. Finished my last year and a half of eligibility there. But I wasn't going to graduate, so I had to still be in school. So, you know, Coach Cordova, who's still the current head coach and AD there, told me, hey, listen, just stay involved, help me out a little bit. They already had a full-time assistant. And obviously I was just done playing, but he says, you know, there's some things you can do so you can still stay around and graduate. And I was like, all right, cool. So I kind of hopped on board with that and it kind of, I didn't really expect what I was going to get into. And from there, it kind of just took off. The full-time assistant coach ended up leaving for another job. And then, so I was still a student 1 year removed from playing and kind of elevated up to the assistant coach. So it was kind of crazy. I didn't know what I was doing, but I learned a lot just from getting thrown into the wolves right away. And it was like a student/former player/ undergrad assistant slash assistant coach position.
I love it. All right. So you said you learned a lot. Touch on that a little bit. What did you learn during your time as a coach there?
So as a player too, I was basically, I want to say like one of the coach Cordova's first recruiting class, and he kind of just built the program from nowhere. Before he got there, they weren't in the NAIA. I don't know what league they were in. So as a player, I was like one of the founders, or, you know, one of the originals. And then as a coach, him being the AD and trying to start an entire athletic program, he was busy a lot. So there'll be days, you know, he missed practices or days he did this. So he's like, Mario, do this, do this, do this, do this. So I'm like, yes, sir. So I kind of just, you know, trial by error and trying to figure it out as we do, you know, watching a lot of YouTube stuff. But I think that was the best thing that happened to me, though, because, you know, the best way to learn how to swim is someone throws you in and you got to figure it out or you drown. And that's kind of how it was for me. I had to figure it out.
That's really cool. Pretty unique experience too. Just reading your bio and everything that you sort of go through. Definitely unlike anyone else that I've had on this podcast. But you know, I got to imagine you are, or you were at the time, maybe still now too, pretty grateful for the opportunity to have that position as an undergraduate.
For sure. And it all kind of just happened so quickly. Like I said, you know, that first year I was just kind of like, what the hell am I doing? There's guys older than me on this team. Guys I played with that, were like, why are we listening to Mario? He was just passing us the ball last year. Mm-hmm. And then, but you know, it worked out, and, you know, I learned a lot from Coach Cordova and just being there, and it went from being his part-time assistant to the next year, a full-time assistant, to the next year, associate head coach / assistant athletic director. So it moved pretty quickly, and I was able to firsthand see how to not only run a basketball program, but how to run an entire small college athletic program. And at any level that helps, you know, because anything else you can do besides just coach basketball, especially at the small college level. I mean, it's rare. It's very, very rare that you get to just coach basketball.
Yeah.
There's so many more behind the scenes stuff that goes on that I learned at Northern New Mexico with working with Coach Cordova.
All right. So after some time at Northern New Mexico, your family decides to move to Vegas. Walk me through that decision process and what you did with your time in Vegas.
Yeah. So, you know, it was, I want to say my fifth year as an assistant at the NAI level. And, you know, I loved that. I didn't take it for granted, but at the same time, I knew I needed more. I didn't want to be an NAI assistant anymore, whatever age I was. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. It just wasn't what I wanted. So, and my wife, you know, she's from Southern California. She was tired of living in Espanola, New Mexico. We actually had met playing at Northern Mexico. She played too. So we met there as players, and she stuck around because I was still coaching. We had my son out there. So my son wasn't even one yet. And we didn't want my son to really grow up there, and we just wanted something else. So she's smart. She got a really good job offer out in Vegas, working at the Venetian in IT, where she's still working at. So we said, all right. And we packed up everything. We put everything in the U-Haul. Me and my dog hopped in the U-Haul, and my wife and newborn son were in the truck behind us, and we drove out just to not start over, but start our lives in Vegas, Nevada. And yeah, it was crazy. So I get out there, and I go from waking up every day, going to practice, going to the gym, getting shots up with players, you know, scouting, going out recruiting, to being a full-time dad, stay-at-home dad. I love that time I spent with my son, don't get me wrong, but it was just an adjustment for me. Mm-hmm. And then I was fortunate enough when I was out there to meet one of my buddies, was actually on staff at UNLV, and he introduced me to some guys that worked at Vegas Elite, which is a EYBL club out in Vegas. And I was able to start working with them. So that kept me in the gym. It allowed me to meet a lot of people, a lot of connections that I still am really close with today. So that's kind of how the trend, for me to stay in basketball, I went from full-time college now to full-time dad / AAU coach. So it helped me a little bit, but still something was still missing. But days were crazy for me. My wife was working overnight at the time. So she went into work probably maybe it was 6 or 7 p.m. and would get she worked long hours and get off like 8 or 9 in the morning. So AAU practices started at 4 to 9. So my son being at the time, he was a little over 1 year old now, going to practice with me 4 times a week, barely walking, diapers on. I'm holding him, trying to blow whistles and help kids learn basics and teach fundamentals and all that stuff. And at the same time, looking over my shoulder, like, oh, where'd my son go now? Yeah. You know, he's running around the gym, getting into everything, knocking stuff over, spilling his milk. But definitely an experience I would never not want. So that was really good for me too. So,
was there ever a point when you were in Vegas where you felt, man, I just don't know how I'm going to be able to get back into the college coaching circuit, or maybe even a little bit doubtful?
Of course. Yes, being in the Nike circuit and stuff, you know, it always gave me, I thought, you know, still a little bit of life left in the college game. But there was times I was like, man, what am I going to do? You know, going home and thinking about stuff. And, you know, I don't know if you ever coached AAU, but, you know, they're not the richest people. And I had to figure out a way to make money. So not only was I doing that, I was driving Uber and Lyft during the day. So my wife would get home off of work. I'd hop in the truck and I'd drive around Uber and Lyft all day around the strip, come home, let her relax, let her just go to work, get my son, take off the basketball practice, and then do it all over again. And I'm just always thinking, like, man, why did I leave? Why did I leave Northern New Mexico for this? I was like, maybe I did have a good, you know, and I kept second guessing myself. And then ended up getting another job at an elementary school, working there in the morning, still doing the Vegas Elite stuff in the evenings. And that was rough. Yeah. I was the cross guard, the hall monitor, the behavioral specialist, whatever they needed me to do, I was doing it. And still at the same time, I'm taking my son with me to work every morning for the 2 hours for my wife to get off of work to come pick him up. So I have a little 2-3-year-old running crazy at this elementary school. There's like, who hired this guy? And why is their son running these hallways? So we're out there. It was cool, but it was probably the worst job I had, not because of the actual job, but just because of what my goals in life were. My goals in life obviously were to get back at the college level. And I'm like, well, there's not many head coaches that are going to hire a hall monitor right now to help them out. Mm-hmm. So there were every day I'd wake up just thinking this was it. What am I going to do? So it was tough on me mentally, but you know, my wife was always, you know, just stay positive. Something will work out. She's always like that. She ends up always being right, but I don't want to hope she doesn't hear that, but yeah, she always ends up being right. So I just, whatever.
Okay. So how did you end up back at Northern New Mexico College?
So I remember the day too, the just like it was yesterday. I was at the elementary school working. I was sitting in the hallway during classes, making sure no kids are running around in the hallway or sneaking out of class, and my phone rings. And it's Coach Cordova, who I said is still the men's coach at Northern New Mexico and the AD. And he was like, hey, how's it going? Just wanted to touch base. And he was just calling me, I think, just to say, hey, to check in. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, by the way, I think he said it jokingly, thinking I was going to say no. He's like, you know, the women's coach just resigned midway through the year. Do you want to come back? And I was like, yeah. Just I just said, yep. He probably thought I was joking, but I was like, no, I'm serious. How can we make this happen? And so he was kind of laughing. I really don't think he took me serious still, until I texted him a couple of times that day. And I told him, I said, listen, if you're serious, I'm serious. Let me talk to my wife, and see what we got to do. You know, let's talk and how can we make this happen? So, the talk of my wife was interesting, as anybody could think. She was like, we just left that place. We're not going back. And I was like, yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for me. And she understands it. Like, she knows my passion for the game and my passion for coaching. So she understands, and she's like, all right, let's do this. But her job was very good out in Vegas. I'm like, well, I don't think it's the right time for you to leave your job. So, you know, she stayed in Vegas and I went out to New Mexico in December of, what was that, 2018 to finish off the year. There was like 8 games left. So I finished off the year there. And then the following year, my first full-time year as a full, you know, a head coach and had the full year, I was able to bring in my own players, and I brought in 17 players, and my wife still stayed in Vegas, so we're still doing the distance thing, making it work, and you know, just a lot of stuff happened real quickly. So I just knew, you know, I had to jump on that opportunity.
So when you got back to New Mexico and you were the interim head coach for those few games left in the season, tell me what that was like.
It was awful. It was bad. And nothing against the players that were there at the time or the assistant coach that was there. It was just, I want to say it was bad because it wasn't my program. So I get it. I'm sure it was extremely difficult for the players as well. Losing their coach, you know, in December, and the season's over in a couple weeks, and who's this random guy coming in yelling at us.
Right.
So it was just bad overall. And kind of after the season, the players all decided to go their own way. And I think it was a neutral decision for me and them, honestly. So I spent a lot of that summer just recruiting, and it was hard because I didn't have anybody come back. So I really went out and brought in 17 players in the matter of, you know, I didn't know what to do when the season ended, who was going to come back. So season was over in January or February for the NAIA for us at the time. So from February, March, April, May, June, July, I brought in 17 kids and trying to start it from the ground up again.
Wow. Well, what did you learn from your time as the head coach? I know it wasn't a very long time, but what did you learn while you were there?
I mean, it's just so different being in that head coaching seat, you know, because as an assistant, you're always to give your input, and sometimes coaches are like, okay. Sometimes are like, no, we're doing it this way. And then now it's like, this is your ship. If you turn one wrong way, it's your fault, you know. You're responsible for so many things. And really the hardest thing too is that I stepped into is, how am I going to schedule this practice? Or how am I going to schedule practice this week? How am I going to schedule practice leading up to the conference play? And everything had to change. And I think that's what I learned a lot, was just getting prepared differently throughout the different courses of the season. Because you kind of got to approach it differently. You obviously approach every game to win, but there's so many different parts of the season that it really matters what you do in practice. So I think that's what I learned most, just because, like I said, this is your baby now. This is yours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, just every decision falls on your back, you know, and if it's a good decision, then good. And if it's a bad decision, it's your fault. Exactly. And that's, as an assistant, you know, you don't take responsibility for the good decisions that your coach makes, you know, unless they're ones who are going to, give you credit in front of everybody, which is awesome. You know, if you work for a head coach, it's going to do that. But if your head coach makes a bad decision, it really has nothing to do with the assistants. You know, no one's looking at the assistant like, wow, they must have told her to say that or him to say that. Nope. No one's thinking that. It's all the head coach. I can't remember the exact quote, but I was watching one of these Zoom clinics during quarantine, and a coach was on, and she said something along the lines like, it may not always be your fault, but it's always your responsibility. That's, you know, that's what we're talking about right here. It's just so true. And that for me is the biggest difference that I've seen. I think no matter what, head coaches and assistant coaches have to adapt. The head coach is just the one who takes responsibility for either failing to adapt or successfully adapting to any situation.
Yeah, exactly. I think you nailed it. I mean, it's just that transition and being able to adapt And like you said, ultimately now it's your responsibility, the outcome of every game. And you know, that's something that we live with. And I think that's why we're in this profession, because I mean, we take that upon us. We're competitors and we like that. But at the same time, you got to figure it out quick.
Mm-hmm. All right. So as a coach, what are the top five things that you give a damn about? So I know that Coach White likes to call these gottas. So what are your top five gottas?
With me and the players, it's just, I think my biggest one that I really give a damn about is, do you love basketball? I understand, you know, coaching fundamentals and preaching your system and your culture, all that is big. But for me personally, it's just, do you love basketball? And I think that's kind of what I go to when I'm out recruiting. That's one of the biggest things I look at into a kid or when I'm asking the coaches about a specific kid, does that player love being in the gym? And I think when you, and coaches aren't going to lie to you for the most part, they'll tell you, cause you know, that's, they're putting their name on that. And I've had many coaches tell me no. And I was like, all right, well, that says enough. And I've had coaches tell me, yeah. And you know, and if I hear that, that's one of my main things. And not only just in recruiting, but when the players are now in your program, I want to make sure they still love being in the gym. And as coaches, we got to kind of, and I know during this season times it could be hard. They could be tired and, you know, you just want to rest. Or if you're on like this losing spree, it's easy to fall out of love with that. And so for us as a coach, we got to find a way to keep your players in love with being in the gym. And that's one of my biggest things that I do. Is I just love players being in the gym. I'm one of the coaches that you can call no matter what time it is. And if you want me in the gym, we're in there and we're working on stuff.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, I love that. And I feel like that's definitely a flexibility you have as an NAIA coach, where that's not something that at other levels you can get away with doing. But I was very fortunate to have a coach just like that in college. I mean, our assistant coach, literally I could call him at 6 a.m. and he'd be like, all right, I'll be right there, because he was just like you know, he wanted to help anyone who was passionate and wanted to work hard. And yeah, I think I love that. But I think at the same time, and I don't know if you agree or disagree, or I guess I could turn this into a question. How do you then, you know, coach a kid who, because it sounds like you're really passionate about this sport, which I love. I'm really passionate, but I don't think that all of my players are as passionate about basketball as I am. Now, granted, I think it's a spectrum. They may be really passionate, but in my eyes, I'm the most passionate person about this sport, you know, and I could be wrong, but in my eyes, I'm not, right? So how do you coach a player who isn't as passionate as maybe the player on their right, or as passionate as you?
You know, that's a great question, and it's hard. And I this might be the wrong answer. But to me, especially at the college level, if you're not passionate about this game, if you don't love this game, to me, that looks lazy. And I just can't associate myself with lazy people. So how to coach them? I probably will. I don't know. I probably won't coach them. Maybe then I'm not the right coach for that kid. And that's fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but I don't think it's fair to the other players, or it's not fair to that kid either. Cause then if I try to push them too hard, I'm making them do something they don't want to do. Mm-hmm. But I mean, obviously you're going to have those issues during the year when, you know, you have your top six players who are getting all the play time, want to be in the gym, want to do this, cause things are, you know, that's what they do. And then you got 7, 8, 9, 10 who are just like, whatever, I'm just here for the ride. I'm here for the social status. But you need those players. I probably can't answer that, but like I said, to me, that just makes you feel lazy. And I have a hard time, like I said, dealing with lazy people, or I don't want a player on my team who doesn't love the game, because it's not, at the end of the day, it's not going to work out. Mm-hmm. We'll probably end up transferring or getting released.
Yay! All right. So During your first official year as the head coach at New Mexico College, you get a call from Coach Green at Adams State University, and she offers you the top assistant job and also the recruiting coordinator position. So tell me, what made you decide to take a step back from head coaching to become a top assistant?
Yeah, it was tough. It was tough at the same time. It wasn't tough, if that makes sense. My ultimate goal at the coach is I want to coach at the highest level as I can. And, you know, getting into the NCAA is extremely tough. I don't care what level, D3, D2, Division 1. And I just felt like it was the right decision to be made for my career. You know, it was important that my wife supported it fully as well. And it was a good spot. It was the right spot at the time for me to go to. Coach Green, she's had an amazing career as a head coach. And obviously I knew about her. I did some more research on her. I wasn't just going to leave to work for anybody. So that just helped the situation out. And I know I could learn a lot from her. And just being that I'm familiar with this region still, you know, Adams State, Southern Colorado isn't really that much farther from Northern New Mexico. So it just felt right that I knew what kind of facilities they had. I knew how nice the university looked. So I knew I would be able to recruit high level kids to play here. And to be successful. So that was probably that made my decision. I wasn't going somewhere that was completely in the dark for me. Like, I knew of it. I've been there. I've played there. I've coached there against Adams State. So I knew the area, like I said. I knew the region. I was comfortable recruiting the region. And like I said, you know, the facilities here on campus and Coach Green, I knew I could trust her, and I knew I could learn a lot. So that was kind of what made me make that jump officially.
Yeah. It sounds like a no brainer.
For sure. For sure. And, you know, I loved in that 1 year at Northern New Mexico as the head coach. I learned so much, and I got so close to that group of kids that I brought in. That's what really made it tough. But at the end of the day, I knew that I had to make this decision and had to make this choice to better my career and at the end of the day, it's going to help my family as well. So, like you said, it's a no-brainer. But everything that happened at Northern New Mexico for me made me ready for this position, and working with Vegas Elite and all that stuff, you know, all the connections I made in the coaching world, really helped me, especially going out and being the recruiting coordinator here now at an NCAA school. Those relationships I've built over those couple of years at Northern New Mexico as a coach and as a player on both sides, the men and women's side, and then working with Vegas Elite, meeting so many coaches, high school coaches in that area, really just those relationships have helped me tremendously in recruiting right now. This 2021 class we're bringing in is going to be special, and I'm excited for them. And all these kids, I have a relationship with their current coaches. So I wouldn't, you know, a coach isn't going to send a kid to play for you if they don't know you, they don't trust you. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going out there trying to fake who I am to get players. That's just, I love going out and meeting people, and these coaches are trusting me sending kids to play here. And I think that that's what I love to do. And that gives me an edge at this level.
Yeah, no, that's crucial. You definitely need an edge, right? When we're talking about recruiting, and you need high school players, club coaches, high school coaches to trust you. Otherwise, just like you said, they're not going to bring their players to come play for you.
Exactly. 100%. 100%.
All right. So moving towards our next question, which is a question I've lately liked asking coaches that I have come on. How has coaching through 2020 been? And what are some things that you've learned, or maybe things that just have been reinforced?
Man, I mean, you go backwards in time a year, and if for whatever reason you can see the future and say, hey, this is what's going to happen at this time next year, you'd be like, get out of here. There's no way. It's not going to happen. It's 2020 where, you know, that just won't happen. And then boom, you know, this COVID-19 just kind of knocks everyone off their feet, and not just in the coaching world, but just society as a whole. So, I mean, it's been tough, but at the same time, you know, it's not just Adams State University going through this stuff. It's everywhere. You know, so you can't use the, oh, woe is me thing. It's everyone's going through something right now, not just in coaching, but I mean, there's in other jobs and professions, everyone's just being hit with the unknown. So I think what it's helped me with is just making adjustments and being ready for the unknown. And every day is different. You wake up thinking you're going to go to practice at 7 a.m. You get a phone call from the head coach of the AD, and you're just like, hey, no practice today. You guys are shut down. Mm-hmm. Or, hey, you think you're playing on the 5th, and then now you're going to play on the 8th and the 11th, and then now that 5th game will be now on the 12th. So it's just so many adjustments and just preparing for the unknown. And ultimately, I think it's going to make you better as a coach. It's going to make the players better. Because that's what we do, you know, during games. Halftime comes and we got to make adjustments. So I think we're used to it, the adjustment part, but now really adjusting to the unknown, that's something that is helping me be better, just because you never really know what's going to happen. So you got to have an open mind, and you can't be selfish, and you can't get caught up in your feelings. Because like I said, it's not just you going through this. It's everybody in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've all been thrown this curveball, and we're all, you know, being yanked around as far as, okay, you can practice, never mind you can't. Yeah, you can, mm-hmm. never mind you can't, or you can, but now there's these restrictions. So yeah, it's wild to think that, you know, this is something that every coach, every player, every human being in the country, in the world is like, okay, all right, how do we navigate through this? This is new.
Exactly. And like for me, if the worst thing right now for me as an individual is, hey, you're not practicing today, you're not playing this year. If that's the worst thing in this global pandemic, then I can live with that. Like, as you know, people are dying, you know, it's people are losing jobs, and there's a lot more things that could be, you know, 1,000 times worse than not being able to play basketball. So, and that's how I kind of approach it too. At the end of the day, if I'm healthy, the my family is healthy, the people I love about are healthy, then it's not that bad, because it could be a lot worse. If I have to sacrifice coaching basketball for a year, then it is what it is. But there's just so much stuff that's still unknown. And like I said, I think that entire unknown has really helped me grow, not only as a coach, but as an individual.
Mm-hmm. Well, that moves us into our next question, where we talk about that growth. So obviously I know the way we were connected was through a coaching clinic. So, I would imagine you've spent a lot of time on Zooms learning from other coaches, probably more learning throughout this, quarantine than any other short period of your coaching career. I don't know. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. Because I feel like every day, every week, there's a new coach who's got a new thing to talk about. And before, you know, you had to go make a drive somewhere if you wanted to hear someone talk, and coaches don't have all the time in the world to be putting on these clinics because they have practices and games, and I could go on and on and on. So I'm just going to say here out on a whim that you've probably learned a lot just when we're talking about coaching during these last 8 months than maybe you have elsewhere. So how have you taken this time to grow as a coach?
Yeah, and I totally agree. You know, the Zooms and all these clinics now that are kind of just, they're so convenient because we don't have to drive anywhere. Well, one, because we can't, because things aren't open. But you know, that really does help, and you get to see other people's ideas and their, how they come up things and how they want to run this or how they run that, and their different, overview of even like the smallest aspect of the game. I remember watching like a whole 2-hour Zoom just on ball screen defense. And then I've been watching other, you know, 2-hour Zooms on a whole offensive philosophy. So there's just so much that coaches have to offer that I'm taking advantage of. And it's good. And then sometimes, don't get me wrong, sometimes I'm just like, I'm over the Zooms, like, oh, I'm done with it. But I think this has helped my patience too. Just sitting down and focusing has helped my patience and my focus for me to be able to do that. One, because I'm into it. But two, if I don't do this, then other coaches are going to pass me. They're going to be getting better because they're taking their time to learn more and advance their game. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's kind of a competition to me too. I'm not going to let you learn something without me knowing it. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be the lazy one here. So I got it. I'm just real competitive. And that's one of the things too. But the entire thing, my focus and patience has really increased because I'm always just, I have to be moving. I can't sit down for the longest time. I'm a nutball, I guess, but it's really helped my patience.
I think it's really helped a lot of people's patience for sure. So I agree with you definitely 100% there. Do you have any advice for younger aspiring coaches?
Learn as much as you can. Never be afraid to put yourself out there. When I was younger, I was kind of, at times I would go to clinics or I would be on, you know, different Zooms at the time when it was just starting, or I would be out watching practices. But just don't be afraid to get out, you know, get your name out. Don't be afraid to network as much as you can and keep the love for the game. If you don't have love for the game, you're not going to make it. You got to make sure you love what you're doing.
Yep, absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Coach, for joining me on this episode. I really appreciate it. And I wish you and your team nothing but the best as you navigate through the rest of this pandemic.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for allowing me to use this platform, and everything you're doing for the game of basketball right now over this is really appreciated. I mean, I always listen to all your stuff, and I really appreciate what you're doing for the game.
Thank you.